now more Operation Freedom with your host, Dr. Dave Janda, on Southeast Michigan's conservative powerhouse, Wham! Talk 1600.
Welcome back to Operation Freedom, folks. I'm Dr. Dave Janda, broadcasting from our ancillary bunker, Link Termain Freedom Bunker in the People's Republic of Ann Arbor. We're here for you every Sunday afternoon, 24/7 at davejanda.com. I am honored to have back with me someone who is one of the best, if not the best, financial analysts in our country and frankly around the world, Bill Holter. Bill is a subspecialist, if you will, in, I believe, the most important financial market as it relates to your financial freedom that exists, and that's the precious metals arena. For those of you not familiar with Bill, after a lengthy career in financial services, Bill saw something coming down the track, and he retired in 2006 and moved his family, in fact, out of the United States. After the dust cleared, he returned in 2011 and currently makes his home in the great state of Texas. Bill joined Miles Franklin, which is a precious metals broker, milesfranklin.com, as an associate writer in 2012. He remains as a precious metals broker with Miles Franklin. You can reach Bill at billholter.com. Bottom line, folks, Bill is one of the best forensic economic analysts in the world. It's my privilege, pleasure, and honor to welcome back what he's known as Mr. Gold, his partner, Jim Sinclair, who's he's with us today from heaven. Great viewpoint. Jim Sinclair, who is a legend in the precious metals arena, was known as Mr. Gold, passed away. That handle was passed on to Bill Holter. It's my privilege, pleasure, and honor to welcome back Bill Holter. Bill, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
So, Bill,
and I might mention that today Jim would have been 85 years old.
Well, he's just with us in a different place, I believe, and he's probably saying to all of us, if you know, we can channel him, and he's saying, you know, I told you this was coming, and by the way, I told you that they would try to pull all the stops to prevent gold and silver from realizing their true and intrinsic value. So here we are, Bill. We're a month into this this war. I will hold off the adjectives. Needless to say, people know I'm not very pleased about the situation. And in times of chaos, geopolitical unrest, we tend to see the prices of gold and silver going up. And this is why folks are so anxious to hear what you have to say on this. You know, when this war started, or the latest version of the war started on February 28th, that Friday before, silver was 94, gold was about 5,200. When the war was announced at 3 o'clock in the morning on February 28th, and I'm guilty of this as well, I thought, okay, well, if silver ended at 94 before this started and gold was 52, close to 5,300, man, we're going to be banging up into 6,000 gold, and we're going to be banging up into well over $100 an ounce for silver. But instead, we've actually gone significantly the other way, down. Bill, what's your take? In times of geopolitical unrest, why are we seeing gold and silver significantly being hit on the negative side as far as price?
Yeah, looking at it from a historical point, going back to 1987 when the market crashed, they figured out that they can push markets where they want them using derivatives. They figured that out because a whopping $6 million is what saved the system in 1987. The only futures that were open were value line futures. Somebody stepped up with $6 million worth, and that's what turned the market that Tuesday morning. Now, from that point forward, if you look at both Iraq wars, if you look at geopolitical turmoil, gold and silver continually get hit, and it's done with paper, it's done with derivatives. Prior to 1987, if you go back to the 1970s, early 1980s, whenever there was, like, think about Afghanistan with Russia. Any time there was geopolitical strife, the safe haven would be viewed as gold. And it would move pretty much unfettered because there was not even any futures or options on metals until, what was it, 1975 or 76. So what I'm telling you is what's happening now is the playbook. And what they want to do is whenever there's some type of geopolitical problem, they want to show the public no. So this dude, what's happening now is not surprising whatsoever, because they figured out how to bully markets, and they've gotten really good at it because they've got got a lot of experience, and they've got unlimited fiat money to move futures and options in the direction they want.
So, Bill, play this out. Right, this war does not seem as though it's coming. You know, they anticipated this was going to be a 24, 48, maximum 72-hour event. Then they told us it was going to be maybe a week, then 2 weeks, then 4 weeks, then, well, maybe several months. So, Bill, play this out. What do you see happening in the foreseeable future?
Well, the initial battle, if you will, Iran was getting pounded, and it's my opinion that the U.S. loses the war from a financial standpoint, because this war, mm-hmm. all it's going to do is speed up the decline, the decay, whatever you want to call it, of the dollar. Mm-hmm. And it's one thing you are seeing, interest rates are going higher.
Yes.
We're back up now to what? 4.43, 4.45, something like that on a 10-year treasury.
Right, and close to 5 on the, yeah. Uh-huh.
Right, and that was 4%, 3.98 or something like that, just a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. So I view this as it will ultimately expose the underbelly of the fiat fractional reserve over-leveraged system.
And in fact, the only oil we see moving out of the Strait of Hormuz right now is, well, Iran gets paid a toll, several million dollars per tanker, but also they're being paid, and the oil that's being transferred is being paid, not being bought, not in dollars, but in Chinese yuan currency.
Correct.
So then is it safe to say this downturn, of which it's been significant in both gold and silver, is more of a temporary situation as opposed to the inflationary situation, the stagflationary scenario, actually, which has developed, which we saw in the 70s, in which gold and silver and hard assets did quite well?
Yeah, this is a temporary. I mean, gold and silver were due a pullback, mm-hmm. and then they used the war as an excuse. They made the pullback much more severe than it should have been, and they've used the war as an excuse. In the longer term, as I mentioned, what this is going to do is it's going to expose the weakness to the financial system. It's mm-hmm. going to expose, if you want to call it, the borrowing capacity of the U.S. Treasury.
And Bill, educate us. You are an aficionado on looking at what's going on behind the curtain. Educate us on where we are with the supply and delivery side of this equation, because you have said for many years that what's really going to break the back of the manipulation that the banksters have been involved with of gold and silver is a failure to deliver scenario. So where are we in that spectrum as it relates to the supply and demand side and the failure of delivery?
Yeah, gold and silver are a little bit different in that respect, because there is liquidity tightness in the entire financial system. So you have seen some selling of gold to raise cash. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're going to sell what they can sell, and if they've got a lot of things underwater, they're going to raise cash from something that's at a profit, and that's gold. Mm-hmm. Now, silver is in a structural supply-demand deficit, over 400 million ounces per year. The world produces 850 million ounces, and it's using, call it, 1.3 billion ounces for everything, including solar, industrial, medicinal, etc. As far as, and I, you know, was on the record saying I thought that March would be the month that silver failed to deliver. January, which was a non-delivery month, mm-hmm. normally we get a million or two, maybe 3 million ounces, stand for delivery. 50 million ounces stood for delivery. Mm. February, again, another non-delivery month, 25 million ounces stood for delivery. Then March came along, which is a primary month, and on day one, there was 52 or 53 million ounces standing for delivery. And I'm looking at that, and I'm saying, well, I think it's going to be this month now, because for the last 2+ years, whatever stood for delivery on day one, the final number would always be higher.
Right.
Now, prior to two and a half years ago, they'd start with, I'll just use the number 100. They'd start with 100, and there'd be, you know, fiat payoffs or whatever to get contracts that are standing not to take delivery, mm-hmm. and it would shrink. So it would start at 100 and maybe end up at 70. Mm-hmm. And over the last two and a half years, they started 100 and ended up at 150, 200 every single month until this month. The number now is 42 million, down from 52 million. And one other thing happened that I don't know, I don't think it's ever happened before. The CME mm-hmm. Stood for delivery of, I believe it was 113 contracts. Now, you gotta ask, you know, why? Why would the CME, what interest do they have in standing for delivery? And the only thing I can come up with is there's no way to find out whether that metal is actually delivered. Mm-hmm. So it's possible that those contracts were completely naked and could not deliver, and the CME covered it. Hmm.
So how did they start out with 52 million ounces going to be delivered at the beginning of March and end up at 42 million, Bill? What is the excuse that they're giving of, or don't they just give an excuse? They just pretend that this didn't happen, or what did they say, and how did they pull this sleight of hand off, if you will?
Well, that'll never be discussed publicly, because mm-hmm. that's a question that they don't want asked. Mm-hmm. I can tell you in the past, years ago, what they would do is simply offer a 15%, 20%, 25% fiat premium uh-huh. to not stand for delivery. Mm-hmm. And then the buyer would take that 120%, buy silver elsewhere, and pocket the rest as profit. So I mean, that's one way to do it. Another way to do it is, face to face, don't take delivery. You know, some arm twisting. Now, I'm not privy to that, but it makes no sense that the month of March, especially with what's happened, you know, the prior, 3, 4, 5 months to that, demand has exploded all over the world, and now all of a sudden, the amount standing drops by 20%. Mm-hmm. That's highly suspect. Mm-hmm.
And looking forward, Bill, what are you seeing when you look at contracts that are already issued that are pending in April and May and June? Do you get a feel for that right at this point?
Yeah, April is a delivery month for gold, and I believe May is a primary delivery month for silver. I mean, this is not going to go away. Mm-hmm. All they've done is kick the can down the road. 30 days.
Mm-hmm. So, Bill, there are. I'd like your take on this. There are some folks that are saying, well, they believe that the United States government has discussed this in public about putting a price floor on critical minerals, critical materials, and of which silver is one of them. There is discussion that, oh, they're going to announce their price floor for these minerals, including silver, in April sometime. And they have done everything possible with their algos and their paper shenanigans to drive the price of silver in particular, let's say, down. And in so doing, then when they declare a force majeure, when these price, let's say the price floor they announce on silver is $80 an ounce, $100 an ounce, whatever it might be, that they'll, the COMEX, the CME will declare a force majeure, and then they'll pay these contracts off, as it says in the fine print of these contracts, at the cash price that they're willing to settle. So they drive the price, let's say, down to 60. And right before this price floor kicks, right before the announcement kicks in, the announcement kicks in from the government about this price floor at 80 or 100, and the CME comes in and says, oh, a force majeure, we can't deliver. Okay, well, your paper, we're going to settle your paper contract at the cash price of 60. Meanwhile, in the market, with the price floor, it's at 80 or 100. Do you see that as a scenario? Because a number of people have painted that.
Bingo. I mean, you just described nirvana for COMEX.
Yep.
The shorts get out on the cheap, and the longs don't get their silver.
And Bill, there are people that say, well, that's never happened before. Well, in fact, if we go back into the 1930s, isn't that exactly what FDR did? He said, turn in your gold for 25 bucks or whatever it is, and we'll give you 25 bucks an ounce. And then when they reopened essentially the window, it was all of a sudden valued at 32 bucks. Am I remembering history wrong?
Yeah, it was $20.67, and it was revalued to $35 after the confiscation. That was a little different because you were talking about basically money that was circulating, mm-hmm. that the government called in. It's really not the same thing because you're talking about money that was circulating versus mm-hmm. here we're talking about an exchange mm-hmm. where you're trading the silver.
Mm-hmm. And Bill, you mentioned a very many important points, but one of which is we are in a structural supply deficit of silver and have for a number of years. Well, Bill, with this war that's ongoing, where in all of these armaments, such as cruise missiles,
it creates more demand.
Creates more demand, right? So there are a number of ounces. There's a debate about this, whether there's 500 ounces in each Tomahawk cruise missile or 5 or 50 or whatever it might be. There's still silver in it. And if we look at all these weapon systems that are getting blown apart and electrical systems that are getting blown apart across the world, all of these systems are heavily dependent on silver, which in fact, to me, and please tell me if I'm reading this wrong, it creates an exponential demand on silver that's already in a deficit. Am I reading this wrong?
No, that's correct. And that's not to mention the silver that's going to be gobbled up and must be used in AI.
Mm. So, Bill, if you look in your crystal ball that has been very accurate over many years' time, as we, I don't know, meander, muddle through the next several months. Are we gonna see an explosion in the price higher, just as we were actually seeing the beginnings of it in December and January, or are we gonna see a slow trickle back up based on ongoing manipulation of these paper markets?
Well, I think we're in the bottoming process right now. I think it's a good possibility that we've already hit bottom Sunday night into Monday morning. I mean, gold got down to, what, $4,030?
Mm-hmm.
And silver got under $61. By the time you woke up, they were back to almost unchanged.
Right.
So I think we're in the bottoming process going out forward. Yes, can they mess with the prices?
Yes.
Yeah, they can with paper, but we're talking about a structural deficit, and in the words of Elon Musk, you cannot short a shortage.
Right. In our final couple minutes together, Bill, as I mentioned, you're on the front line as a precious metals broker for Miles Franklin. So what are you seeing as far as sentiment revolved around buying and selling of gold and silver? Do you see a lot of people cashing in? Do you see a lot of people stepping up? Do you see a lot of people saying, oh, my head's spinning, I just can't handle this, the volatility? What are you seeing and hearing?
Well, North America was a notorious seller all of last year.
Mm-hmm.
Starting probably February or March, we started to see a lot of sales. And then when silver went through $50, then we saw a bunch of sales from people that had bought back in the 70s and 80s.
Mm-hmm.
That is changing. We're seeing far fewer sales, and the demand on the retail side is definitely starting to pick up in North America.
So what's the biggest mistake people can make right now as it relates to the precious metals arena?
The biggest mistake you can make is to try to trade it. Thinking, okay, I'm gonna liquidate and I'm gonna buy it back. Because think about this, Dave, what you were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So we get silver down to $60, and the government talks about a price floor. COMEX does a force majeure. You can't buy it on COMEX.
Nope.
And then silver goes into hiding. So you were smart selling it at $90, but you missed your buy target, and now you're locked out. Because once you're out,
you're out.
And yeah, right, exactly. So I think the biggest mistake is to try to trade this. And I actually, on Jim Sinclair's birthday, I will say what he said two or three years ago. He said the final rally, and it will last quite a while. It's not something that's just going to be, you know, boom and that's it. The final rally is the rally you do not sell, because where do you put your money?
That's right. Well, surely not in something that is dependent on the full faith and credit of the United States government, that's in over $39 trillion of debt, right? Right.
Or any government.
Right. Hey, Bill, what's the most effective way for folks to not only follow you, but get in touch with you?
You can go to my website. It's www.billholter.com. There is a contact button on the site. If you want to go directly to my business email, it's bholter@proton.me.
Bill Holter, I would like to sincerely thank you for your service over many decades' time for focusing on every person of our, not just our country, our world's financial freedom and liberty. I thank you, Bill, for everything you have done, are doing, and will do. I thank you, folks, for joining us. Until next time, Dave Janis signing off. Dream big and dare to fail. Thanks for being with us.